Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
Brant and Mike and I got together again to continue our chat about Africa, and it turns out that Brant had actually gone to Egypt. So in this show, we spend most of the time talking to Mike, where Mike continues with stories about Africa. Because Mike travels to Africa for various business purposes, he gets to see all kinds of things that normal tourists wouldn't really notice. And he talks in much more detail about wastage. However, because of his work, he can't give you all the finer detail, so he has to be a little bit vague. But he does tell you about the things that blacks do when they buy very expensive, very sophisticated equipment, and how they waste it, and the tremendous wastage and ineffectiveness of the blacks in Africa. So listen very carefully when Mike tells those stories, because he's trying to convey stuff to you where he can't go into full amounts of detail. But he's dealing with equipment that's very expensive, and it has to be dealt with very precisely because people can get killed. So it's not the kind of stuff that just anybody can buy, and he tells you of the silly things that he sees, and he's horrified by the wastage of these people. So these people are poor, and they then have money, and governments and businesses want to buy certain expensive equipment, and then hear how the blacks waste it and the things that they buy that cost enormous amounts of money, and then they don't even use it. And also things that they buy that they can't fix, and then they just let it go to waste. So most of this show is about what Mike is telling you and our discussions around that. But then towards the end, we start moving into the stuff that Brant wants to talk about, and that is what those photos on the screen are for. The main photo that you see is Brant in front of the pyramids at Giza. And if you look very carefully, far in the distance, you can actually see Cairo. And then there's this other photo taken from Cairo where you can see the pyramids. So we just started getting into that topic near the end, but it's very fascinating. And Brant gave me a couple of other photos, which I'm leaving for the next show, because there are things in those photos that are worth discussing. And the really interesting thing is that Brant ends up going to Egypt on a holiday, but once he's there and he starts looking around and he hears about these people boasting that they had built the pyramids, and then he sees how dysfunctional they are, then he starts realizing that there's no ways in hell that their ancestors could have built those pyramids. But his descriptions about the Egyptians and the way the Egyptians behave is very interesting. I've never been to Egypt or to the Middle East, and about the only person that I know personally who went and spent quite a lot of time in Egypt was that friend of mine who passed away, Gilbert. And he told me some things, and the things that Gilbert told me match up exactly with what Brant tells you. For fun, at the end of the show, I've got a couple of videos that we found, and these videos show just a little bit of the dysfunctionality of Africa. I will tell you that it may surprise the rest of you outside of Africa that the blacks are dysfunctional and that they do all these stupid things. But to the whites who lived in Africa, we knew the blacks well enough that all whites who lived in Africa permanently, that all of us were horrified by the thought of blacks running countries. We talked about it among ourselves, and everybody without question knew that it was going to be a total and utter cock-up. It was going to be a huge disaster. But if you listen to my discussions with Mike, you'll see that there are big corporations who run certain things in Africa, and they even have got compounds where the whites from overseas live, and these people supervise the machinery. Robert Mugabe, the communist who took over Zimbabwe, used to actually talk about neo-colonialism. And I myself didn't know why he was talking about neo-colonialism. But that really boils down to the type of stuff that Mike is discussing. And it's a very fascinating topic because officially the whites left Africa. But in reality, you'll see that big businesses would still come to Africa and they would deal with governments and with countries. And it might surprise the rest of you to know that big globalist corporations have got so much money, and I'm talking American and European corporations, have got so much money that it is very possible for them, if they wanted to, they could literally buy entire countries in Africa. I'm not making this up. If Western corporations wanted to buy countries lock, stock, and barrel, they actually have the money to do it. They could buy every asset in the entire country and own everything. But it's just that the blacks aren't selling because the blacks do want to retain control of their countries. But if it came down to pure money, blacks could actually be bought out. Whites from the West, using nothing but normal corporations, could actually buy up Africa. You could buy it. And you could own everything in it. And the blacks would be happy to run away with the billions or trillions that you give them. It is actually possible. But the blacks know that the West can own them lock, stock, and barrel. So the West came back to Africa, but selectively for financial reasons. Most, if not all, of the mining of Africa is owned by companies outside of Africa. So mining and all kinds of other stuff like oil and gas is owned by Western companies. And they come and they put the money in and they do the stuff and then the blacks work for them. But the West has got tremendous amounts of power. And even like here in South Africa, we've got car factories in South Africa that manufacture cars for Europe. So the blacks are like the cheap labor for car manufacturers, and the cars are sold in Europe. So this is what could be called neo-colonialism, that Europe and America don't govern the black countries, but through money, they've got tremendous power over lots of blacks. And that also helps to give them leverage. But it's a very interesting topic. And the important thing about neo-colonialism that I want to tell you is that if it wasn't for neo-colonialism, all of Africa would just have collapsed in a heap. Because the blacks can't do the most basic stuff. And everything that works in Africa basically comes from whites. And Europe is really the continent that has the closest need and links to Africa. Because Europe needs to get various natural resources, and Africa is the natural place for Europeans to get it. The Europeans do not have the amount of raw materials that the Russians, the Canadians, the Americans, and the Australians have in their huge pieces of territory. So the Europeans need Africa in terms of getting raw materials that they need. So neocolonialism is a thing that we can examine more closely later. But here is the show, and some fun videos follow at the end.
Hi there, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Good to have you back. Hi there, Brent. How are you doing today?
Hello, Jan. I'm doing splendid. Thank you.
Well, since we're all awesome, then that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Mike, one of the things I just wanted to ask you is if there are any additional things you could tell us about your impressions of your times in Africa.
Yes. One thing that I remembered after our last chat was I forgot to mention that our assumptions about our abilities in our countries to resolve conflicts and our methods of doing so don't necessarily exist. So sometimes it's hard to go somewhere and a concept that you take for granted just simply doesn't exist there. And one of those is our ability to resolve conflict. I have, and many people have seen this, who've had to go to Africa for work. I've seen very expensive equipment, specialty equipment of any, it doesn't matter the industry, but of any kind, that gets abandoned, not used, even if it's purchased brand new, and cast aside. And we could be talking about things that cost millions of dollars. And it's just something we can't wrap our heads around, maybe back here in the U.S. Unless, of course, it was the government doing it, but that's another story. But it's very, very common over there. And in South Africa, have you seen something like this, Jan?
In South Africa, we do have certain amounts of wastage, but because South Africa is so unlike the rest of Africa, it's not as bad as the rest of Africa. But there are very weird things. And you say wastage of equipment that is worth millions of dollars, even brand new.
Absolutely.
You mean they buy something and they've paid you guys and they don't use it? Why? What do they give a reason?
they don't have reasons.
So that's another Western thing. At least we have reasons.
Yes, right. I've seen it more than once over in different and in different countries, and it could be a simple maintenance event is necessary, and then it gets not done, and then the equipment is ruined, or it could be the equipment was never used from being purchased new, and that's usually involving some kind of government purchase or government money. Although I have also seen privately purchased equipment not be cast aside, so it's just something that is kind of foreign to us, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. In some ways, what you describe is what J.B. Campbell saw. J.B. Campbell, the guy, the American who came to fight in Rhodesia that I've interviewed before, J.B. Campbell was saying that there are things that people outside of Africa, whites outside of Africa, just cannot grasp. They cannot grasp. For example, like J.B. Campbell was saying that he tries to tell white Americans that some of these people are unteachable. You can't teach them. And people just cannot grasp that. And another thing I've seen as well is a buddy of mine in a neighboring state. There's a buddy of mine who's European, and he lives in a neighboring black state that's more backward, but he's got a good business. And then what happens with him is his staff go on holiday. then when they go on holiday and they come back, they've then forgotten how to do their work. So he has to teach them all over again. So those kinds of things. People don't understand how backward they are. And just because you people can grasp things, you know, we all suffer, maybe all whites suffer from, there is a particular term. It's called survivor's bias. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Survivor's bias is when someone is, if someone goes through something or they've done something and they managed to survive but others died, then those who survived kind of tend to think that everyone should survive. A particular example of survivor's bias was an engineer in America who looked at bombers that came back from raids in Germany. And then this guy looked at these bombers and he did a whole study of them, and then he noted where they had been shot. And so, you know, which parts of the bombers were being damaged the most often. And then what he did was he said, well, we need to strengthen those areas. And then somebody else pointed out, but hold on, these are the bombers that came back. What about the bombers that didn't come back? Because you don't know where they were shot and they clearly didn't make it back home. So in a sense, whites have got a kind of survivor's bias because we can do things. We assume everybody else can as well. And it's a wrong assumption.
Well, we also assume they want to. In one particular work incident that I experienced, a company had a fleet of equipment that needed tires, and the local workers would not change the tires or not air up the tires, and then would sit around all day. And then somebody would come from one of the foreign, let's call it foreign management, you know, somebody from Europe or the US or something, and would just, you know, wave their arms yelling, and why haven't you changed this tire? Why haven't you aired up these tires? And just, you know, make a big scene. And then of course everybody would stand up that was sitting, all the locals that were sitting under a tree would stand up. Oh, well, there's boss, there's no tires. You know, we couldn't find any tires, you know, just, and it would just happen over and over again. And so we I think maybe we shouldn't assume that everybody wants these things to work, because they could be monkey wrenched by the simplest little thing. As long as that thing caused the people not to have to work that day. And that's, I don't think I'm the only person that's noticed that.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting that they're just not interested. We also in Africa, we've always had a problem of driving and motivating these people. And it's very real, definitely. You know, they can do things that we would never think of doing, in the sense that there are things that, for example, I've lost my train of thought. I apologize. But there are things that we would never think of doing. Like, I've watched the self-destructive nature of blacks as well. And there are things that they will do that we would just never think of doing. We would not even conceive of it. Like, there is the taxi industry. The taxi industry in South Africa is a big thing. And the taxi industry are basically these Toyota minibus taxis. And it was actually created by apartheid, actually. It was actually the white president of South Africa who created the taxi industry so that blacks could have like their own businesses. And so he created it, and under apartheid it was created, and the law was that only black people can buy Toyota, can buy taxis, and it must be 100% black funded. In reality, behind the scenes, there were whites who came and struck deals with blacks, and whites actually purchased some of the vehicles, and then blacks would work with it, etc. But the idea originally was to create capitalism for blacks. Well, can you believe that in more modern times now, you've got taxi associations that fight with each other, and these taxi associations will get people, they'll hire people to go and destroy stuff, set stuff on fire, etc., just so that they can get business. They will even go and destroy, they'll destroy competing vehicles, they'll destroy things that other equipment that could that could take passengers away, and they'll go do it. They'll set things on fire, they'll burn stuff, etc. These people are in a completely different frame of mind to us. There are things we just wouldn't do. We'd say no, you know, you're going too far, or that thing is you know, too negative, it's harmful to all of society. They won't think like that. They won't care if society burns down. But it is interesting, that story that you tell about workers just sitting around doing nothing. And that's another thing, is like African time. They aren't that worried about time. They aren't that concerned about time. And it's us who are driven by time. We are very cognizant of time. We're driven by time. We've got to get stuff done, etc., etc. Blacks, to the blacks, they don't see that. And when I did that video, I don't know if you guys saw that video, that one that I did about witchcraft and all that stuff. There are so many things about blacks that I've started thinking about. I remember in Rhodesia, they said at one time that blacks are 10,000 years behind us. But nowadays, now that I actually know more history and history of whites going back 40,000 years, I'm actually wondering whether 10,000 years wasn't too optimistic. That when I see what hunters were doing in Europe 40,000 years ago, freaking in the snow and so on, and then I look at these blacks, then I look at their equipment and what they had when we got here, I'm starting to think that, you know what, blacks are maybe 40,000 years or 50,000 years behind us. To say that they're only 10,000 years behind is being too optimistic for them. Their minds are completely different. All of our concepts are so not like their society. Their society, and when I was a kid, I mean, they live in huts. On the farm that we lived on, they lived in Rhodesia, everywhere actually. On the farms, the blacks live in huts. Those huts that you see pictures of all across Africa, that's how they lived. They go and they get some wood and some mud and some grass, and they go and build themselves a hut, and that's their home. And you know, their weapons are to go and, you know, break a branch off a tree and try and carve a thing we called a knobkerrie, which is basically a club. And I used to see blacks walk with that. We used to have those things. So, you know,
Hey, Jan, what I wanted to say is, when I hear people say that a certain group is 10,000 years behind or 40,000 years behind, something like that, I think that's a bit of a misnomer. I think, once again, that's white people thinking as white people and not putting themselves in the other person's point of view. If there's no selection pressure in a place like Africa, where you don't have to prepare for the winter time and there's going to be more or less abundant food, it doesn't matter if people live there for a million years, they're not going to be the same as white people because there's nothing forcing them to change. So just living through thousands of years isn't going to make any difference.
That's very insightful. I have no problem with what you're saying. Very insightful. So, Mike, any other stories relating to inefficiency or things that you've seen them do? And I must also add, you saying that they don't care. Let me tell you, after working with them and watching them, I must tell you, they don't give a shit. Truly, they don't give a crap, except about themselves and if they need some food or some sex. It's either food or sex, and beyond that, they don't really care much about anything else, I don't think.
Yes, but first to reply to Brandt, that's an interesting statement. But I wonder if we've done more than just innovate to survive for the winter. Like we, for example, we don't have any particular survival need to make complicated space vehicles or create satellite systems, or these are just we want to push further, we want to innovate further. So I wonder if there's more to it as in addition to the need to survive based on weather and climate and so on.
Yeah, Brent, do you have any thoughts on that?
The only thing that I know that's scientifically based is that when volumetric measurements are made of brains of different races, the white race has the largest prefrontal cortex, which is assigned to creativity. So for whatever reason why we have a larger prefrontal cortex, maybe it's there was selection pressures where the people who were more creative in the past came up with solutions to not die during the winter time, because we basically lived through the last glacial maximum. We were living through an ice age for thousands of years, so maybe we had a little niche where our people evolved with that innate creativity, and maybe curiosity was also selected for. And once we had all our survival needs met, well, then what do you when you're a winner, when you have energy and you take care of your basic needs? Well, you want to keep creating, you want to keep exploring, you want to keep moving forwards. And we had the societies that were high trust and high functioning, so we could go off and specialize, and we had these universities, and our societies reinforced these people's pursuits in avenues of excellence in mathematics and science and biology, etc. So from that point of view, to me, it's inevitable that we would create a space program, that we would create satellites, that we would create even more and go further. And we've been held back because of anti-white policies and anti-white propaganda, where before we were just moving on ahead. And we also had competition. Like in the United States, we have competition between states. On a larger scale, we had competition between the Soviet Union and the United States with the space race, and that propels people forward even faster, because they have to measure their goals against what someone else is doing. So I think it's just a big overall natural progression. So that's my take on that.
Well, it will make Ben Klassen of the Church of Creativity very happy to hear that, because that was his conclusion about our race, was he concluded that the one feature that we have that stands out is creativity. I'm going to add another one, is war. War is a pressure that forces lots of innovation. In the same way that you were talking about the space race, there's a lot of innovation that comes from warfare and combat that has driven a lot of stuff that exists. There's a lot of things that wouldn't exist if it wasn't for
for that. And I think that we're also very competitive, that that is where some of the fighting and the struggles come from. But yeah, it may just be that because, like you say, that those who came out on top, that it also, they were also the ones that had the most creative minds. And yeah, probably we've reached the point where now we are curious about many things, and it fascinates us even when there's no selection pressure. Like even space fascinated me, space and also the inner world, you know, the micro world, atoms and things. You know, there are thoughts that we think that nobody else seems to be thinking.
Guys, that's fascinating. You've made me come up with a hypothesis because of both of your answers. Is our excess capacity and excess intelligence beyond basic survival being engineered and stolen from us through anti-white policies, as Brandt says? It kind of clicked, and I said, wait a minute, you know, why? We are so far beyond just basic survival. No one in our societies should be hungry, even if they're basic people that have a little bit less commercial, you know, value or whatever to offer, or perhaps, you know, as we originally set up systems to take care of people that were handicapped and so on. No one should really worry about the basics. We're capable of creating far beyond basic survival, but I wonder, is our excess capacity being stolen from us somehow through what Brandt called anti-white policies? That's a very interesting answer.
Well, in the case of the Jews, I have various thoughts on the Jews, as I think of the Jews as a lower man that's lived among us, but he specializes in living off of us. I actually did that evolution video. I don't know if either of you had a chance or to look at it, but I did a video where I was looking at animal behavior and trying to see if I could see similar things between human interaction and animal interactions and Jews. And so I was looking at parasites and stuff. I don't know if you saw any of that.
Yeah, I did, Jan. And actually, back a few years ago when I was teaching fifth grade, I had a little magazine that would come out once a week, and it would be a science magazine, and we would read it for the kids and distribute it to the kids. And one of the issues was about parasites. And they had a lot of fascinating photos of these insects that were taken over by parasites and what they look like and what the parasites did to them. You know, the parasites burrow down inside, take control of the brain or the nervous system, can eat the host out from the inside, you know, make the host move around. And I had thoughts, you know, along the lines of what you just said right there, where we have people who are not Western kind, who are not descendants of European, they're not our people, and they're in our societies, and they are, from a point of view, it can be argued, I think, quite well that they are parasiting off of what we have set up, and that does piss away, or it shunts our creativity and our value to our own people and what we could be, because we're having to harmonize with these other people constantly. We're having to live under anti-white policies constantly, so it's like we've got, you know, we're being hobbled all the time, and our people have been brainwashed to accept that and think that that's the moral thing to do. So that's my goal in life, is to get that turned around.
Yeah, yeah. You see, when I look at us, what makes us unique is we are the only humans who totally have been able to overcome all natural forces. You know, we are the only humans who've developed the intensity of skill and technology to overcome physical things, like whether it is
sailing ships, motor cars, flying through the air. Nobody else comes even close to any of that. And it's actually extremely difficult to do the things that we've done. And so I think that, and then, but when I look at Jews, then I see Jews focus on humans. Their entire existence, everything about them focuses on humans, whether they do business, whether it's religious, spiritual stuff. Whatever Jews do, they are always working off people. You don't get Jews that, you know, that like, 50 years ago, some Jews went and invented space rockets. It was Germans and Russians and Americans that built, you know, space rockets. Jews weren't worried about that. They're worried about the money and the business and the and all those human related things. And the more I look at them, the more I see them as trying to herd us like cattle. I see them as trying to herd us and push us along, and they know us so well that they can see, these people are heading off in this direction. We need to move them to that direction because otherwise they're going to go there. I see it was almost like one of those examples in that video where the ants had a herd of some other little insect. And if those other little insects were going away, then the ants would like break their legs and stuff like that. And I see Jews trying to do that to us.
The Jews break our legs psychologically. They make white people feel guilty. That's how they break our legs.
Yes, that's kind of how I see it. Whereas we are totally focused on real reality. Like everything about us is about the real world. Like I was watching that volcano in Iceland. And there's another one in Sicily. Both of them are very active now. And I was looking at that and there are the whites. The whites are saying, you see, this thing's going to blow in so many days because, you know, so many cubic centimeters per second is coming in of magma, blah, blah, blah. All kinds of very high tech, very sophisticated mathematics and engineering knowledge and scientific knowledge to even know that. For if you had to go and ask the blacks or the Jews why is the volcano blowing, you know, the Jews would tell you it's Yahweh, and the blacks would probably tell you it's the witch doctor, you know. So
exactly.
So yeah, there was one other thing I wanted to ask you, Mike, about the stuff you'd mentioned about Africa. You'd said that in various cities in Africa that there are small white communities of specialists who do various stuff.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about that. Are they running the electricity, or what are they doing? What are they doing? And I'm assuming they're doing it because the blacks can't do it.
I noticed that foreign workers from Europe, United States, Australia, New Zealand, and even whites from South Africa are living in these other African countries, like, for example, in small numbers in West Africa, working in various industries. And I, just from my, you know, looking with them or interacting with some certain people, I just kind of thought, well, you're kind of quietly and without much appreciation holding everything together here in whatever particular situation it was. So I think in the specialty world, I have not seen, and it doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but I've never seen sort of specialty or industrial, type of commercial ventures that have been completely turned over to local local Africans.
So there's a limit to how far the blacks can go, and so the whites do the other stuff that the blacks can't do.
Well, a lot of times these are foreign companies that also have their own compounds. This is something that a tourist wouldn't see or necessarily know about. But there are definitely, depending on the size of the company and the industry, there's definitely compounds that are full of exclusively foreign workers. There's just certain industries that have that set up with their local government or whatever. And you wouldn't know it, you know, walking around the city. But these people live and work in isolated, guarded places to be able to keep those industries going, so to speak.
Wow, you say even guarded places, like special security.
Guarded, and some of them don't allow the workers to leave and go to the local areas. It just depends on the company's policy and the industry. And, you know, I'm generalizing several industries here, but it you know, depends on each particular situation. But they're guarded, walled, separated cities, or not city size, but say little compounds that are associated with that particular company or industry. And they have everything. They have everything inside. They're a mini city, and they don't rely on the infrastructure or the distribution systems of the city at large that they might be near.
So basically, this then helps to explain why Africa just did not collapse completely after black rule. It's because secretly there are companies that are holding all kinds of industries together.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So I have another question. Did you meet any whites who were in Africa for long and who were in Africa, and how did they view the local blacks and their IQ and their abilities?
So I've met in various countries. I've met whites that were born in those countries, and I've met whites that are doing a stint at a company that sent them over. I find the whites that were born, and I'm very, very broadly generalizing multiple countries, multiple situations, but if I find the whites that were born in East Africa or West Africa, East Africa is more common. There's far more whites born in Kenya than, say, Nigeria, but just generalizing, I find them to be very low-key, easy to get along with. They've grown up and learned basically how everybody operates, how to get along with everybody. You're not going to get very far coming and making a nasty or, you know, what would be considered a racist comment or something like that to whites born in Africa. But at the same time, if you get to know somebody and they trust you, then the sort of friendly observations start coming out, and then, you know, and then frustration, and they, you know, they let their guard down, and they'll talk to you a little bit more in that regard. But if you come off strong, trying to make some sort of a comment, and you don't know them well, they'll, you know, they've grown up there, so they don't necessarily want to participate in that. But they'll tell you the truth if you're subtle and you get to know them. And then as far as the people working that are just in and out, and this could be 1 year, it could be years, but people that are sent in and out for work, it depends on what extent that they're just living in their compound. And of course, there's all kinds. There's people that just spend a period of time somewhere and then they leave, and they just, you know, go there for the job and for the money. And then there's other people that end up staying, and they end up getting a place living in the city there. And I think that's just all types. I don't think I can compartmentalize those people. Some are You know, some probably want nothing to do with the outside city that they're near, and then others are fascinated by the, you know, the opportunity to see something different. But overall, though, I will say this: there's nobody there that thinks they don't need to be there, and that they could be locally replaced. So that I would say that attitude would span everybody being sent in. You know, whether they're, you know, an engineer for a particular industry, or they're there to accomplish some kind of big project or something like that. I don't think that they think, well, I don't need to be here. They could have hired somebody from the village over there. I think that that would be a pretty, pretty hard for them to deny that.
Okay. Very interesting. Are there any other observations you have either on blacks and their technical skills or blacks as managers and leaders?
Well, there. Of course, there's going to be some people in every group that excel and that they're above the average. And there's, you know, there's talented people that that are discovered or found, or they themselves want to. They're attracted to some, you know, foreign company or something like that. So that, you know, there's not zero talent, but at the same time, I believe there's another misconception by Westerners, and that is, how should I say this? There's a high ability in, and I think, and this is my opinion, but in African culture, there's a high ability to mimic or to parrot. So if a Western manager comes to Africa for a project, they oftentimes will go through this process of struggling and to discover with staff who is sincerely talented and able to do their work versus people that are able to mimic. So that's something I think that they get frustrated with, and they discover over time, because no one tells them. There might be somebody working with you that's a middle manager or even a perhaps technical position that is actually kind of faking it. So that's something that it's a very nuanced knowledge of Africa that only somebody that had been there for a very long time or many times over time could kind of pick up on, which is dangerous for their operation. Because if you have people that aren't honest about their own skill and are just faking the job, you know, this, if depending on the industry and depending on the level of technical things going on, or perhaps the type of equipment being operated, this can cost lives. So there's no room in industry for this concept being pushed on us of, oh, you know, make sure that you know, you have this many of this group and this percentage of this group. There's no room for that. They people operating equipment that is dangerous and has the ability to inadvertently, through, you know, through misuse or bad operation, kill people, they need to only hire and train people who demonstrate the ability to understand the seriousness of what they're doing and the ability to honestly communicate if they don't understand some aspect, or, you know, or take their training seriously and not just mimic understanding of something, and by doing that save lives. But instead, if they come from some sort of woke Western company and they're not allowed to thoroughly vet people, and they're supposed to look at race instead of talent, then they can end up with people in their midst that are totally, completely incompetent and are able to pass it off and fake it off for even years. So it's kind of a problem for industries that, you know, let's just say for industries that dig big holes in the ground, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, because these things are dangerous operation taken on by intelligent men.
I understand. Yeah, so you see all the downsides of a low trust society and all kinds of games, eh? That it's just completely different to our world, to the Western world. Yeah, but very interesting that I'm very impressed that you could spot the mimicry. I'm very impressed that you could spot that. So, yeah. No, very, very interesting, Mike. Lots of input there. So I think, Brandt, we wanted to talk a little bit about some of your adventures. And you've traveled around a bit, but I want to ask you maybe for some background is you traveled to Egypt. But I want to ask you, what made you think, did you go to Egypt for racial reasons or did you just go there for a holiday? let me put it that way.
It was holiday. It was right at the end of one of the school years when I was teaching, and I had it planned for a few months to go to a couple places. I was actually in the Ukraine, and then went down to Egypt for 8 or 9 days, and then back up to the Ukraine, and then popped into a couple different countries, and then back to the States.
So you genuinely went there without thinking about that you might see anything that might indicate racial? I'm just genuinely curious. I'm just asking out of absolute curiosity.
Well, see, it was... someone else that I was going there with wanted to go to Egypt because for some countries in Europe, Egypt is a vacation spot. You go to Egypt or you go to Turkey or you might go to the coast of Greece or maybe you go to Thailand or something. I don't know. They think a little bit different than the Yanks do. And okay. I had wanted to see the pyramids. So I said, yeah, okay. Like if this includes me getting to see the pyramids, yes, I'll go. If I don't get to see the pyramids, then, you know, I don't really care. So that's why I went.
So at that point, I'm assuming, were you shallow enough that you had not looked into racial history and you didn't expect to see anything that related to whites? I'm just asking.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting anything one way or another. And I certainly did not understand the true history that the pharaohs were much more related to European DNA and DNA coming out of the British Isles than other places. I really didn't have an opinion formed on what exactly the ancient Egyptians were. Most of the depictions that I had seen were these sort of brownish looking people. And so I didn't have an opinion at that time. I didn't really care. I didn't know what to expect. I just wanted to see the pyramids. So like whatever crap I have to put up with to see the pyramids, I want to go see the pyramids. So that was my attitude.
Okay, interesting. So tell me about the pyramids.
Well, first of all, most of the pictures that people see of the pyramids, they're kind of romantic looking. You just see desert, and then you see the three pyramids of Giza. And sometimes you can see the Sphinx as well. And most people don't know how it's laid out because it's not presented to people so that you actually see what's going on. It's presented so that it looks cool in photographs. But Cairo is this big, let's see, put it in the more crass terms, it's this giant shithole of this just urban sprawl, this kind of third world sprawl, and it's right up close to the pyramids. The pyramids are on a slight rise and just like a couple blocks away, what I would consider to be the lengths of, you know, regular blocks in a town. I think it's called Giza, that part of Cairo. starts right there. So yes. when you're going to see the pyramids, you're on the tour bus and you can see little glimpses of them as you're driving through Cairo, and you can see them for about 25, 30 minutes before you actually get just clear of town, and then bam, you're right on the pyramids right there. So they built Cairo right up to the pyramids there. So it looks super trashy and crappy unless you go around to one side and you kind of drop the camera down and you take a picture of the pyramids where you can't see Cairo. Because like I said, the pyramids are just slightly elevated above the city of Cairo. So if you get in just the right spot, you can take a picture so it looks cool.
Okay.
And the pyramids themselves are impressive just because they're so gigantic. But unless you are a VIP, you're a visiting professor or something like that, you're allowed to, you know, crawl around on one of the pyramids. It's the one that is on the western side. I think it's Khufu. And you can see where the big blocks, the first two or three layers of blocks, have been worn down a lot by hundreds of thousands of tourists crawling up on them and coming back down. The other pyramids are hands off. You can kind of get close to them, but you're not allowed to touch. You can't go in, etc. And I could understand why. I mean, that would just be logistically crazy to have these thousands of people that are showing up in tour buses just constantly to see the pyramids. It's a big draw. And I think a lot of the economy of Cairo, and probably of Egypt in general, is tourism. If they didn't have tourism, they would be SOL. And
S-O-L?
Shit out of luck in American speak. So the thing that really struck me after the day that I spent in Cairo, you know, going all over the place to various sites, is that the people who live in Cairo now, their ancestors did not build the pyramids. They didn't build these huge statues and columns, and there's some labyrinths and some other things that are there in Egypt. They're there now because they migrated there from other places, but they claim that they built the pyramids. You know, that's their pride and joys, that, well, we're geographically, we live right next to them now, so we're going to say that we built them. But after spending some time around those people, and I don't mean this as an insult, but there's no way in hell that those people or their ancestors built the pyramids. You just happen to be living there now. Somebody else made them.
So is that the first thought that started coming into your mind after you'd now been there a while?
Yeah, it was. And like I said, I was totally naive when I went there. I wasn't expecting anything one way or another, but it became very clear to me that, again, I'm not meaning this as an insult. It's just an observation. It's just the truth. These people do not function on a level where they could have organized and had the mathematics and the discipline and the forethought and, you know, put in the times, the generations or the decades required to get all of this stuff done, get it organized, get it built. I mean, these are just not the type of people to get that done. And you probably know what I'm talking about. Mike knows what I'm talking about. And, you know, if there were different tests done, psychology tests, IQ tests, etc., you could start compiling evidence and make cases. But when you grow up in a white society, and then you go to another society that's not a white society, it's a huge difference. It's a culture shock. Plus, it's also a shock in you're seeing people that are not operating at the level of competence that you are used to or that you expect from adults.
Yes, very interesting. Yeah. So it was a shock. It reminds me of that Boer pal of mine, Gilbert. Gilbert wanted to join the French Foreign Legion. But then eventually he managed to get himself a job with some high-ranking guy in Egypt. And he was a bodyguard for this guy for like 2 years or 3 years or whatever. And then he went to America.
But Gilbert said to me, because that's far away from us, and we don't have direct contact with those, let's call it North Africans and Middle Easterners. And Gilbert said to me, he said, "Young, these people are more dysfunctional than the blacks." And I said to him, "No, man, that's not possible." And he said to me that that from what he saw, those people can't get much done. So that's the only bit that I can say from what I've heard. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I can't disagree at all. One of the things that stood out in my mind is when we were entering the, I think it's called the Egyptian Museum. And some people call it the Cairo Museum because it's in Cairo. So they have all these antiquities gathered up from around Egypt and it's all in one place. So the like the dollar value is you can't calculate how valuable everything is inside of this building. And they've got King Tut's tomb and King Tut's, here's his sandals and here's his sun towel and here's King Tut's radio and here's of these things from all these pharaohs. It's just massive. And instead of having a reinforced building with security systems and cameras or lasers or whatever, their solution is to have just a shitload of guys walking around with AK-47s. That's their security. And also, you can't take cameras inside. And their way of processing people is they have these little plastic laundry baskets out front, and they say, just throw all of your cameras and crap in here in this basket. But like, do I get a ticket? Like, how do I know? Like, just put it in the basket. You'll get it when you come out. Like, okay, that's the organization. And then when you walk inside, there's guards. There's more guards at the front, and I noticed that one of these guys, he got in an argument with another guy. And this goes back to something that I saw growing up, watching the news as a little kid in America, when there would be altercations between Palestinians and Jews. First of all, I didn't know and I didn't care, but I would always see these Arabic people that were just yelling and crying and wailing and being very emotive, and the men were kind of acting like women and how they were crying and carrying on and yelling and all this kind of stuff. And this is what I saw from the security guard. He was upset about something, so instead of being professional or bringing it up later, saying something under his breath to another guard so he doesn't attract attention like a white man would do. He starts kind of yelling and stomping around, and he's waving his hands, and he's getting all emotional. And I'm looking at him and thinking, like, what the hell am I looking at? This is supposed to be a professional. This is supposed to be a guard, and he's acting like an emotional woman right now. It's just like it's not making any sense to me at all. And that's how some of the other ones would act. And if you're outside around them, they would say, here, give me your camera and I'll take a picture of you, and then you give me like $5 or something. So there's always hustling going on constantly as well, because it's a poor country. And you have a lot of people coming up to you trying to sell you like little plastic pyramids made in China or someplace. They're always trying to panhandle, always trying to make deals, always trying to I want to buy your sunglasses. I want this, I want to do that. Like, no, thanks. I just want to see the pyramids. I didn't come here to visit you. Okay, you get to claim that you have all this stuff now. And to be honest, that made me a little bit angry too, because I understood that these people didn't make all of this stuff, but they get to claim it now. And I'm a person that I really care about the truth and I care about what's fair. So that struck me as wrong. So those feelings always stayed with me.
Wow, interesting. Plus, of course, these guys have got AK-47s, and they're emotional in this room of valuables of untold value, cannot be recreated again if they are destroyed.
Yeah, I thought that was a bad idea, but that's the way they handled it. That was the level of either forethought or competence, or they thought that was sufficient. I mean, it's just totally different from something that you would see in the States or something that you would see in Germany or Sweden or Britain. And it's that shock that you get as a as a member of the white race, when you go to another country and then you see it face to face, you're enmeshed with it, you're stewing in it, and you think, holy crap. Okay, this isn't on the vacation videos. This isn't on the, you know, the books about the pyramids that I've seen. This is real life, and you can see all of these hundreds of thousands of little cultural and intellectual differences between what I think people, how they should act, and how these people are acting. And it doesn't mean they're wrong. It just means that this is the way that they are. But then it's such a stark contrast that you can say, okay, I can understand how these people never made all the stuff that we made. There's no way. They don't have the tools to do that with. They can do some other things. They can mimic some other things. And if our technology, industry, et cetera, is imported into this country, they can make a lot of the things that we have. And of course, we can ship our products into their stores and they can sell it and everyone can walk around with a damn cell phone in their hands. But that doesn't make them us. And that doesn't mean that we have to allow their, that we should allow our leaders to bring millions of these people into our country. Right. So I had all, you know, I have all of these thoughts in my head as I'm over there.
That's very interesting. So you got quite a culture shock, big culture shock from your visit that you weren't expecting.
Right. Well, if you see, I guess if you're going into someplace naive, you're going to get shocked. Well, even when I was in places, when I visited Germany, I visited Austria, I taught in England for a while. Even that's a bit of a shock. And that's just going to a white country. And part of that is, you know, because it's a different culture and I'm not used to living in big cities. So if I go and live in a big city, like when I lived in London, I'm thinking like, what the hell is going on? These people are acting insane. So there's even more for myself, more of a leap between coming from a rural or coming from different rural areas in the U.S. because I lived in lots of different states versus going to a foreign city and living over there. And I will say, I'll say this one last thing. If anyone who's listening to this, if you think that you're really cool, here's what you do to prove that you're not cool. Go to another country by yourself where no one knows you and you don't speak the language. And then you'll find out how cool you really are. So I'll leave that statement lie.
Yeah, very interesting.
That's a great statement to undo somebody's perception of their big ego. That's actually really smart, Brant.
Thanks. Well, yeah, you learn that the hard way.
Yeah, because you've sent some very interesting photos. And yeah, any other minor things before we close up for today? Because then we can talk in more detail about the Egyptians next time, because I'd like to hear your racial take on it next time. But any other thoughts?
No, I don't have any more.
So your creativity has come to an end, eh?
That's right. I've used it all up. Well, you know, or I could say that I want to save it.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, then I think let's wind up there. That was very, very interesting.
What follows is a video that I made based on the videos that Mike had given me and on some others that I went and grabbed. And it just deals with blacks and what can blacks do by themselves and what can whites do by themselves. Some of you may have seen this film footage before because I released it as a separate video. But for those who haven't seen it, here it is. And in here, I discuss what can the black man do by himself when he dreams a dream versus what can the white man do by himself when he dreams a dream. I did a show recently with Mike and Brant, both of whom have traveled to different parts of Africa. And Mike has traveled to Africa a lot.
And after we did the show, Mike sent me some videos which were fun, and we had a good laugh at Black African technology and creativity. But then as I was looking at these videos, and I got a few more videos of my own, I thought that it would be a good lesson to allow whites to study blacks, and to study blacks and whites, and just look at how different our levels of skill are. It is truly horrifying how backward whites have gone in the last 120 years. And when I say backward, I mean backward with regard to our understanding of humans. This terrible darkness that is descending upon Western civilization is a darkness of pure stupidity, and it horrifies me when I see the kinds of things that whites have come to believe. But the source of this is Jews and liberals. Jews and liberals are creating a darkness, an intellectual darkness. Academics have spoken about the dark ages in Europe, but I must tell you that Jews and liberals are taking our entire civilization into levels of darkness and total stupidity combined with weakness. And as a civilization, we are becoming very stupid. The stupidity is not a result of our civilization being faulty. The stupidity is coming from people with a firm agenda, and that agenda is to fool whites. And the biggest con job is to fool whites that whites are equal to everybody else, especially equal to blacks, which is pure insanity. On the social media, somebody published this lovely meme that you see on the left. It gives examples of signs. Do not breathe under the water. Caution, water on road during rain. Caution, trees don't move. Caution, fire is hot. And it says, the need for signs like this proves that stupid people do exist. But the real thing that this meme is not telling you is that these kinds of signs and things were never required when civilization was totally dominated by whites and whites were a majority. But now that you bring all kinds of lower level humans into previously functional nations, now you have to do all kinds of weird, bizarre, and stupid things to deal with the idiots who are now given equality to whites. They are treated as equals to whites, and the horror is that whites are believing it. But they are believing it because they've been inundated with decades and decades of propaganda. They heard things that they did not realize were propaganda. In the show that I did with Mike and Brandt, they discussed many things that they saw in Africa that were weird. And that show will be put out separately. But this thing of the videos of showing things that blacks try in Africa and how pathetic and silly it is really got me thinking. What I want to share with you are those videos plus some additional ones that I got hold of so that you can kind of compare apples with apples. What happens when you've got blacks who are creative and they've got some kind of ambition to try and do some inventing, and they use their meager resources to try and invent something? And then what happens when you get whites who also are in a similar situation and they want to invent something with their meager resources? What are the differences that come out from that? And what do these blacks say when you question them and when you ask them why is their project failing? I thought that this would be quite an educational thing because it's combined with visual stuff. and you can take a lot of information in and look at it and look at it carefully. And then it should be clear to you that there's no ways in hell that you can even begin to compare the thinking of white men with the skill that the white men have and compare that to black thinking and black skills. We just aren't in the same league at all. And this will also give you an idea of how totally dysfunctional Africa is. And in the shows that I've done with Mike and Brandt, they have brought out their own observations of some of the ridiculous and disgusting things that they saw in Africa. And that stuff is discussed in the show that we did, which will be going online in the coming weeks. But I thought that rather than just laugh at some of these things and then move on, that one should actually take a little bit more time to study the film footage more closely and to actually think about it more carefully. And then you will grasp more clearly the vast differences between whites and blacks. Because that is one of the biggest Jewish con jobs that has fooled the vast majority of whites. I have done similar kinds of videos. I did one about leadership and how Jews have managed to fool the whole world, the whole Western world, into thinking that white leadership and black leadership are the same thing. In a recent video, I did a video about witchcraft in Africa and some of the madness and total stupidity that came out of that as well, so that you can see that Western society, American society, and African society are two completely different things. And what white Americans need to grasp, and they don't realize this, is that when you've got a lot of whites in a country and you've got some blacks there, that the whites are able to make the blacks more functional because the whites have got a functional society. And having a functional society allows you to get away with certain things. But as the non-whites pour in, and as the immigrants pour in, and as these refugees pour in, they will bring your levels and standards down, and eventually the country will break. So let's have a bit of fun, but it's going to be fun with a serious view so that you can try to understand and grasp clearly the vast chasm that separates us. And this is just the beginning of racial differences. Racial differences become much more subtle when it's whites and Jews and others. But this should be racial differences 101 to wake you up to the fact that we are not the same, not by a mile. Now let's have some fun looking at black African science and engineering and blacks who want to be the Wright brothers of Africa. What follows are a bunch of videos. Most of them are videos that Mike found, but there are a couple that I added in. Right in the beginning is a bit of film footage of blacks who celebrate the completion of what seems to be a very small bridge, and it doesn't quite go according to plan. The piece is very short, so I actually repeat it twice. Then you can see exactly what goes on. The whole thing of blacks building bridges is almost another topic by itself in Africa, but you'll get to see this tiny bridge and you'll see what goes wrong. And you'd have to ask yourself, whites have been building bridges for thousands of years. I've never gone to look to see how long we've been building bridges, but it's got to be thousands of years. And the Romans were building very, very advanced bridges 2,000 years ago. But the real meat of these videos are the ones to do with blacks wanting to build aircraft and helicopters. And you'll get a chance to see them with their dreams, their hopes and their hopes and dreams
and then the things that they get up to, and then the things that they try, and you'll see them fail. But I'll bet you that virtually every single one of you will have no problem whatsoever looking at these things and being able to come up with reasons why that thing is going to fail. Then it gets more interesting in that there's a guy further on who actually is preparing. He's much more ambitious, actually. He doesn't just want to go with doing an aircraft or a helicopter. He's going straight for a jet, okay? So for him, it's straight to a jet aircraft. And in actual fact, he then wants to put a satellite in space within 4 to 5 years. Now, it's one thing to watch these blacks and have a laugh at them, but I urge you to actually listen to them speaking and listen to their reasoning. From what I can see, all these blacks who are doing these things, they're in different black African countries, and they seem to be from former British colonies. So they speak English properly or relatively properly, and you should have no problem understanding them. And they are acting like Americans and Englishmen for the most part. And you'll see that when things go wrong and they are interviewed and questioned about what they are doing, listen to their reasoning and to the things that they say. There is one black guy who's got an aircraft, and this aircraft of his goes off the runway. But you have to see it to believe it, okay? And if you look at the guy whose aircraft eventually goes off the runway and the aircraft breaks, I think he's a computer guy as well, hey? So just look at the whole setup of what they do, how they do it, what goes wrong, and just look at this and ask yourself a bunch of questions about it, you know? These people clearly have got no conception of even the most basic mechanics. Look at the quotes runway and ask yourself if any plane could have taken off from the runway. Look at the things that break and then listen to the guy explaining what's wrong. And if you really know even the slightest thing about a bit of engineering or anything, you'll be able to point to all kinds of stuff. You'll have a long, long list of everything that is wrong with that thing. But notice the black as he comes forward and he explains what's wrong and what needs to be fixed. Another guy that's really worth looking at is the guy who wants to build the jet aircraft. And so the blacks are already at work with their jet aircraft. And and then this guy, by the way, I think has received something like $80,000. He's already received $80,000 for his project. Not only that, but he's actually gone and spoken to the government, and the government has actually given him an unspecified amount of money. Maybe it's not that much money, but it's amazing that the government has even given him some money or pledged some money. And this black guy is talking, and he's talking about getting a satellite up within 4 to 5 years, etc. But another fascinating aspect of that is watch how they go and interview blacks in the city. And you'll see that there are cars driving, there are high-rise buildings. All of these things are, of course, built by Western money and funds, etc. So these blacks are living in Africa, but it's basically, you'll see, it's basically European influence. You'll see cars and roads and all the stuff that you're used to in a city. And then they go and they ask the blacks on the street, and they say to them, you know, there's this guy and he's going to do this. And, you know, what do you think about a space program and satellites? And just watch how those blacks talk. They talk as if they are living in America. They talk as if they're living in America or Germany or England. And they are saying, yes, yes, that's a good idea. And it would be good for the people and, you know, space. Yeah, good thing. They don't even ask questions like, can our government afford this? Do we have the technology to do this? None of the above. None of the above. They're just, yeah, yeah, this is a great idea. And off we go. And yeah, we can do it. It's something our nation can do. No problem. So just look at them. It's like they are going through all the motions of being whites living in America with the resources of America. But in actual fact, it's not even close. Nowhere in their dreams can they come even close to any of this. But they're talking up a storm. And this is something I saw in South Africa when I worked in the corporate world. Once you get these blacks and non-whites talking, they're talking like we are able to build a rocket that can go to the moon next week. And they talk like that, but they have no conception of what it really means, whether they can do it, and they just basically mimic. And I think of these blacks as black Englishmen. These are the black Englishmen of Africa. And they act in every way like whites. But in reality, they can't do a fraction of what whites can do. The very last bit of film footage is the Ugandan helicopter. And at least the helicopter, at least the helicopter can start. It starts up the engine and the engine is carrying on. But look at the helicopter. Just look at it closely. And ask yourself, you know, could this thing even fly? So you'll see that all the inspiration that these blacks have got is that they are trying to do what they've seen the white man can do. In fact, in one of those videos, there are blacks who are saying that it's not only the whites that can do this. They are also going to show that they can do it too. So check this stuff out and look at these people. And look at them and then listen to what comes out of their mouths and look at what they can do. And then, you know, this should show you, if nothing else, this should show you that we are in no ways their equal. We are not equal to them. At least white people know their limitations. But you'll see that thanks to Jews, liberals, and communists, blacks no longer think that they've got limitations, and they are vastly overconfident and they vastly overstate their abilities. Just have a look at this.
Dreams of soaring with the buds in an aircraft built with his own two hands. 12 other aircrafts he has built before have all failed to take off. He hopes things will be different this time, the 13th time. The engines roar to life, and then Upendo is out of his hands and down what passes as a runway. For a few glorious seconds, Upendo is airborne. And then it crashes to the ground. Another dream dashed. 13 is not a lucky number after all.
And when the time came, the homemade plane was towered by a car to gain the required speed to take off, but seems to be more obsessed with the ground than the air, failing to take off.
We had our first test flight on 26th of November. we tested the speed of the aircraft and it was okay. But we have some little hitches with the engine. So we are seeking for funds, sponsorships from the corporate bodies, government, and other institutions who are willing to help come on board so that they help us develop this aircraft.
I've been having dreams of flying ever since I was young, but I have not had the support to fly.
The 45-year-old used to watch President Hastings band his chopper as a child, sparking a lifelong passion for helicopters. After years of planning and watching war movies, he decided to build one of his own.
My intention is to show to Malawi that Malawians too can do what the whites do.
We had some challenges with the wiring system resulting in short circuits, but slowly everything has been sorted out.
Felix is eager to take to the skies, but he's been warned against taking a test flight before the Civil Aviation Authority's approval. If his first flight is successful, Felix will be flying into the history books with his homemade helicopter and his sky-high ambitions.
Thursday last week, Gabriel Nderitu was confident his twin-seater aircraft was ready for trials, a step that would either elevate him to a pioneer in aircraft manufacturing in Kenya or leave him trying. But he encountered the first challenge at his backyard. The plane would not fit into the truck he had hired to transport it to Kangundo for the trials. But Gabriel and his team did not anticipate the mishap that followed. The plane collapsed. But that did not mean the end of the road. The mechanics did their part to restore it. And the IT specialist turned pilot, who admits has never seen the inside of a cockpit, did his. The second and third day ended without much success. But by Sunday, the team had done everything in their power to get this plane powered by a Toyota NZD engine and a chloride exide battery to make sure it would fly.
Even if we are able to make it 3 feet or 4 feet, we believe we will have moved a big step.
So in a spirited mood, they gave the aircraft the push they thought it needed to gain momentum for takeoff. A crowd had formed, anxious to see a potentially historic moment. But just when it seemed ready to take the leap, it diverted from the runway and collapsed once again. Gabriel was heartbroken, but surprisingly, his spirit was unbroken.
I'll go back to the drawing board and design the landing gear better and also study a little bit more about the landing gear.
According to his judgment, the problem lies in the rear wheels. He says it is clear they can't support the weight of the 800 kg plane. In a month's time, Gabriel expects to be back here for a second trial.
Got quite a bit of a reserve willpower, and I think the small hiccups are more so nothing to do with the aerodynamics. They are more so to do with small practicalities like sparking plugs, nothing to do with the aerodynamics.
When you dream big, you have to start somewhere. For Chris Nsamba, the founder of the African Space Research Program, that entails using his back garden to construct Uganda's first jet aircraft, ahead of the planned launch of a satellite into space.
Okay, we're supposed to at least have a probe in the lower orbit of the Earth, at least in the next 4 to 5 years.
There is still a long way to go. The engine for this prototype is yet to be built. Chris and his team are just putting the finishing touches to a shell. And they will have to build a much more robust machine from scratch in order to realize his dreams. But his volunteers appear willing to put their lives in his hands.
As we take this project up, I expect to be one of the participating flying pilots for this project.
So far, the program has received a modest $80,000 or so in private donations, but its prospects have been boosted by an official pledge of support from Uganda's government, which is donating an undisclosed sum.
President has talked to them on phone, and based on my report, he has agreed to give them some support.
Reaction to the government's backing for the space program from citizens on the streets of the capital, Kampala, has been largely positive.
Right now we have the priorities to be invested in money, like construction of roads, construction of hospitals. Even the healthcare is in a very bad state. It's really a good idea, but it needs some time to invest money.
Space research, to me, I think is very important. It's very paramount because first of all, it will educate our people.
But Chris's ambitions haven't always been viewed favorably. And he admits that even now, people sometimes think he's mad.
When we are done with our work, when we are done with a project, it does that talking on our behalf. So that's not really an issue of being called crazy.
The development of a thick skin leaves Chris confident that he can deal with the many ups and downs that will surely confront him in the years ahead.
So that is black engineering. And notice these blacks are building their own aircraft. These are private blacks. These are, let's call it, the inventor blacks. And these inventor blacks are doing this. But I want to draw your attention to a simple fact that never at any time in any black African nation have blacks, even as a government, built a motor car or a truck or a tractor. Across all of Africa, there has never once been an occasion where blacks, as a government, as a nation, have even built a motor car. Just let that sink in, that even blacks who have got government powers and funding, and they've got access to the best of black science, the best of black engineering, that they've not even put together a factory to build a motor car or a truck or any other simple wheeled vehicle for their nation. They've not done that. Nowhere across Africa, not even in Nigeria, which has got 200 million blacks. There are lots of black countries that have got big populations, they've got big budgets, and they've never even invented one such thing. They've never said, well, you know, those cars that we're getting from, you know, let's say Germany are too expensive. We want to make a cheaper car for us. They don't do that. You'll see the Asians have done that, but not the blacks. But the Asians have a much higher IQ than blacks because the Asians come from the northern climes, where it's colder and survival is tougher. But just let that sink in, that blacks have not even developed wheeled vehicles, never mind aircraft and helicopters and all that kind of stuff. I was thinking about the black guy who got $80,000 for his jet aircraft. And I think that he is more of one of these marketing types. I noticed this in the corporate world, that if you talk big and you talk bold, then you get money more easily. So if you talk big and bold, you can get money. So that might have been his strategy, and clearly it's working. I'm astounded that he got $80,000. I must tell you that that aircraft frame there didn't cost $80,000. He's walking away with a huge profit for what he's doing. And if he still managed to get some money out of the government, then wow. For those of you who watched my video about black witchcraft, you'll remember the story of the black woman who was a witch and she could knock on a rock with her stick and diesel would come out. And that she fooled the Zimbabwe government, I think, for about 15 months. And they were paying her money and they were even sending somebody to guard her. And they even sent someone to guard the special rock where the diesel came out of. And she fooled the Zimbabwe government for 15 months. So you've got a similar thing going on with this black, with this jet aircraft that's then going to lead to space travel and satellites. He's pretty sharp at marketing, and that's as far as it goes. Now, some of you may turn around and, you know, whites are always critical of themselves, and whites may turn around and say, oh, well, you know, you can't sit and laugh at the blacks because the blacks are poor. You know something? You really have to start looking at the concept of might is right. That if people end up poor and useless, maybe it's because they deserve it. If those people are poor, maybe it's for a reason. Instead of always feeling sorry for them and feeling sorry for them as a nation and as individuals, whites need to get away from that kind of thing. Because what you don't know, which those of us who live in Africa know, is how stupid these people are, how much they waste, and the nonsense that they get up to. I have absolutely no sympathy for them because I know how much they waste and how absolutely disgusting their decisions are. Maybe when I show you more about colonialism and what whites have done, then you'll see it from another angle. But you might still say, well, these are blacks and they did it at their homes, they did it in their backyard, and that was the best that they could come up with. You can't compare them to whites. You'd say whites have got a lot more resources, whites just would go to a factory, etc. Well, let's go and take a quick look at what whites have done with things that they created literally in their backyard. And what I'm about to show you is from decades ago in America. This is actually stuff that some British filmed in America. And you're going to see some crazy white guys, crazy white men, also with dreams just like those blacks. These crazy white Americans had dreams just like those blacks. And they also went and they did things and tinkered with things. And you're going to see stuff that was built by white Americans, all kinds of flying and semi-flying things that they come up with. Take a good look at this and you'll see that these guys, for the most part, managed to get into the air. And look at what they did. And some of it's very dangerous. You'll see the guy with his airship. And some of these people could have been seriously injured, some of these whites. But look at what these whites were doing with no safety equipment and stuff like in modern times. Look at them and look at the risks they took. And all of this is backyard stuff. And look at their backyard stuff and how it worked. One of my favorites is the very last item, which is the guy who built himself the, quotes, amphibious helicopter. Take a look at that little thing that this white American built, and he flies it. And I think it's a very clever design. I think it's pretty wild and pretty cool. And it's actually amazingly stable. Check out the guy who builds himself a little hovercraft. But the guy with the airship, that airship is quite dangerous. And also just with a simple little engine, it doesn't even run properly, etc. In this piece of film footage, it actually has got a little bit of black engineering from America. There's a black guy and he's actually built himself a little car. And at least the black American, unlike the blacks of Africa, at least the black American knows his limitations. And he builds himself a little car that he can actually drive and which actually works. So that's pretty cool. He's actually probably done better than any of the blacks in Africa. But also, remember, the blacks in America have lived with whites for over 100 years by the time this video was done. They will have lived with whites for well over 100 years. So they've had a lot of chance to learn from whites. But my favorite guy in this film footage is the guy who's the cowboy. The cowboy who builds an aircraft in his backyard. Go check out the cowboy. Here's the film footage.
It's a cycle. It's super amphibious. Actually, it's in the helicopter family. A single place job with typical motorcycle handlebar steering and standard outboard racing model engine. At the controls of the craft they're calling the Helivector is the man who developed it, Lewis C. McCarty. Roll and pitch are accomplished merely by shifting the pilot's weight. The test flight is in suburban New York. Not too much height today, but for an extra eyeful, no hands. Who knows, commuters, this could be your 5:15 of tomorrow. Down to a pontoon landing in the water. And as the motor purrs to a halt, we say farewell for now to a unique flying machine.
Now, just because blacks can build something that looks like, or partly looks like, a helicopter or an aircraft, doesn't mean it can actually fly. Just because it has the very basic shape of it, doesn't mean that the blacks have even achieved 1/1000th of the amount of effort that is really needed in order to do such a thing. In fact, you could say they probably haven't done 100,000th, maybe even 1,000,000th of the actual work that's needed to actually make something fly and function. Yet you'll have seen most of those things that those white guys did, and they are white Americans. Most of those things could actually work and could actually fly. So that is a very important point. Even if those things were just experimental devices, and they can't run for, 100 hours at a time or do a whole bunch of heavy stuff, the fact that they could actually lift someone off the ground, that is amazing compared to those blacks. Those blacks had things that were too heavy, too slow, underpowered, badly designed. Those things would never get off the ground unless unless you had like a freaking very potent jet engine attached to it, in which case it would probably fall apart, But those white guys could actually build something that can actually function and can lift someone off the ground. My absolute favorite in that film footage, apart from the amphibious helicopter, I loved the amphibious helicopter for its stability, etc. Because to actually do that kind of thing, that thing can tip over. That guy could fall down into the rotor blades and be seriously injured, if not killed. Yet, his design is nice and stable and he can fly around a little bit. Might not have been able to go that high, but that damn thing works, okay? And it's pretty impressive. But my absolute favorite guy in that film footage was the cowboy. The cowboy blew me away. In various reading that I've done of various scientific and engineering things that I came across, I have come across more than one instance where white American rural boys, farm boys, were busy teaching themselves stuff. Teaching themselves electronics or electrical stuff. And he's just a farm boy and he isn't in the city and he's got to buy a magazine. And these guys that I'm talking about were people who lived well over 120, 130 years ago. There was one story I came across that blew my mind, and I'd have to go hunting for it again sometime. But there was a farm boy, a white farm boy in America, and he decided to learn electrical stuff. And he read magazines, and he started coming up with ideas. That young farm boy created a telephone. He created it maybe even slightly before the telephone was invented properly. But he created it, built it, and it worked. And he just didn't get the patent in on time or something like that. A white American farm boy. That blew my mind. and he was matching others who were scientists and engineers. So let me tell you why that American cowboy with his homemade aircraft impressed the hell out of me. That man has got so many qualities that are awesome. He's maybe a bit of a wild character. That's probably putting it mildly. He's a wild character. But I really loved the way that he got there with his aircraft. He even freaking pulled his aircraft along by himself. He didn't even have anybody to help him. But he built his aircraft. And when he starts the thing, he clearly hasn't put brakes or anything on there. But he's not fazed at all. And as he starts that engine, it's clearly a powerful engine, and he starts it himself. I mean, that engine can kill him. It can cut him to shreds. He starts the engine, it's powerful, and the engine already starts pulling the aircraft along. But hey, he's not hassled, and he jumps on the freaking wing, and he climbs into the plane while the bloody thing is going. That's not what normal engineers would do, by the way. So this is a wild guy, but his wild thing is working, and I checked again and again, that is his plane that comes back and that flies, and it flies. So that crazy white cowboy, that crazy white American cowboy with his homemade aircraft, that thing actually freaking flies. If there was the slightest thing wrong with that aircraft, the slightest thing wrong with it, with either the wings or the tail, that thing would not have been able to fly. The fact that he actually flew, and it has a very powerful engine, and it's flying very nicely. I was stunned by that. You Americans have always had a can-do kind of attitude. It's something that you're known for. You have your American dream, your can-do attitude. You face problems, you overcome problems. And to me, that cowboy with his homemade aircraft, that guy really signifies the wild white side, the wild white can-do side of America. But America can do excellent stuff. White Americans can do amazing things. But that guy has got a spirit about him, but it's not just a spirit. He has the IQ to match it. He could have had all the spirit in the world, but if he was as dumb as those blacks of Africa, his plane would never have lifted off. But he symbolizes a real can-do kind of white guy. And he hacks his plane together, but his damn plane, whether hacked or not, it freaking works. And I really like that approach to life. That is very much a colonial kind of approach to life. It is similar to the kinds of approach that whites in Africa had. Boers had it, Rhodesians had it, whites had it all across Africa. Not maybe as wild as that guy, but we had that kind of approach that we solve problems. And we solve problems with what little we have. The Boers even have a term for it, and the term is a Boer maak 'n plan. And the translation for that is a Boer makes a plan. And it's meant for the fact that when you are sitting with a problem and you don't have the means to really solve it, you sit down and you anyway try to figure out a way to solve your problem. So that American cowboy, that wild guy, he's doing a Boer maak 'n plan kind of a thing. And his thing works, okay? That guy has got a better aircraft than any of those blacks and those teams of blacks. And look at him. He's so gotten together. I like him so much. He freaking even drags his own flipping plane there. And he doesn't have anybody to help him. He does everything himself. And he's not a crybaby, jumps on the bloody thing, flies, takes his risks. That man is awesome. I like that man a hell of a lot. He's maybe a little bit too wild, but I like that man a lot. You know, if white men had that kind of attitude, there is nothing that would hold us back. Really, that is the correct attitude to have. And you Americans, you should build a statue to that guy. I like that guy a lot. I don't know who he is, but I like that man. That man is a man who's not a pussy. He's clever. He makes a plan. He gets his thing done. And never at any time is he afraid. He does a dangerous fucking thing and he makes like it's nothing. That man is fucking awesome. I like that man a lot. So what we'll end off with today for today's episode is a bit of film footage of the Wright brothers, because these blacks in Africa are basically trying to do what the Wright brothers pulled off in America in 1903. So these blacks are trying to do 120 years later what the American Wright brothers did 120 years ago. These blacks, by the way, and make no mistake, you've got to take this into account. These blacks have got the advantage of knowledge. They've got the advantage that they have seen aircraft fly. They know what designs work. They have been exposed to engines, to electrical stuff. They've been exposed to very probably the internet. They've been exposed to all kinds of modern electronics. Take note of the one black guy who is in computers. The blacks described him as an IT specialist. So that is a very high sounding name. It's a high sounding position, IT specialist. Normally a term like that would mean somebody is very technical and perhaps has wide knowledge and very intensive knowledge about certain things. So that is what that name conjures up and would mean in white society. I don't know if he was a computer programmer. I have no idea. But okay, he worked with computers. He must have done something where he could press the buttons and do something with software in some way. Even if all that he did was maybe installed programs and just looked after a server or something. Let's give him some credit, okay? So he's had exposure to a thing like a computer. But the Wright brothers never saw or knew what a computer was. The Wright brothers never had any indication at all of what could fly. So the Wright brothers did not have 20/20 hindsight. The Wright brothers did not have 20/20 hindsight, which could tell them, the plane needs so many wings, it needs so many engines, it needs this, it needs that, this thing can fly, that thing can't fly. The Wright brothers had none of the above. They had to work out their solutions themselves. No internet. At best, they could read books and maybe read books and magazines and speak to people. And that's it. And nobody has had a chance to actually succeed at that. So everything they're doing is totally experimental. Everything is totally experimental. So look at this piece of film footage of these Wright brothers and their strange aircraft that they came up with. Look closely at the wonderful engineering of that aircraft. They knew about the fact that they have to have a certain amount of power for the weight of the aircraft. They had to build the aircraft as light as possible. Look at the beautiful engineering on those propellers. They had to have designed that and thought it through and said, this will give us the best result. I'll bet you tons and tons of work went into things like the propellers. How are they going to get that engine to work? Again, remember, these are old engines. It's not like these blacks who can look back on 120 years of engine design and what engines have been produced. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of engines have been designed by whites, by Asians, etc. The blacks have got all this past knowledge that they can look at, but the Wright brothers didn't. So now I want you to sit back and think. Here is a black in Africa who's got some kind of computer background, and he can't even come to 1% as close to flying as the Wright brothers did 120 years ago. But who were the Wright brothers? The Wright brothers were a bunch of bicycle mechanics. They were white bicycle mechanics, but the black has worked with computers, and that's the best he could come up with. But those bicycle mechanics, white bicycle mechanics, did a far superior job. And if you watch that video carefully, look at all the kinds of little things that they did. You'll even see an amazing thing. They've got a little tower. Take a look at that tower. It might have been made of wood. I'm not sure. And you'll see the men pulling on a rope, and they are lifting up a very heavy weight. There's a very heavy weight that they're pulling up into that tower. And that weight actually pulls their aircraft along. That weight actually gives that aircraft of theirs acceleration. Compare the Wright brothers using that weight to give their little aircraft acceleration so that it can reach a higher speed. Compare it to the blacks who were pushing the aircraft through the muddy path. Just sit and think about that. The blacks were pushing their aircraft through a muddy path. You know, not even a 747 or any other jet aircraft would ever be able to take off from their muddy runway. But there the blacks are, they're giving it some pushing power, but it won't be able to give it the speed. But the Wright brothers solved the problem by having a tower with a weight. And you'll check how that aircraft takes off. All the film footage I've seen says that this was the very first flight by the Wright brothers. All the film footage says that. But I thought that the Wright brothers actually just flew straight and that they flew a distance and that they then landed. Whereas in this film footage, you can see the plane is actually turning and twisting and landing. So I am a little bit skeptical that this was the very first film footage. But I've seen multiple versions of this video, and everybody says the same thing, that it was the first flight. But regardless of whether it was the first flight or the 10th flight, it doesn't matter. You are seeing what those bicycle mechanics came up with. Another thing is, look at how they managed to have their wheels that they attach underneath the plane, because the plane actually slides along. But when they want to pull it with their old car, they put wheels underneath it and they can tow it, and the other guys just hold on to the wings. Just look at all the little things that the white men have done in order to achieve their job and make their aircraft work and not have their aircraft get damaged and broken. Whereas the blacks, their stuff was breaking and carrying on. But look at the Wright brothers. And so the thing I'd like to leave you with is, compare the black IT specialist. Compare the black computer guy in this day and age with the white Wright brothers, who were mere bicycle mechanics. They didn't have any education. They didn't have anything to look back on. They had to use their own brains. They had to use their own abilities and take their own risks. And look at what they accomplished. So when you look at white and black society and you hear, oh, there's a black guy, he's the president. There's a black guy, he's a general. There's a black guy, he's an engineer. There's a black guy, he's a scientist. Don't ever fool yourself into believing that, oh, there's a black guy, he's a general or a soldier or an engineer. Therefore, he's the same as a white general, soldier, or engineer. He's not, okay? He's not, not by a million miles. So keep that in mind. Those Wright brothers, they didn't have any of these advantages, and they pulled off a greater feat. And they didn't have any foreknowledge of what would work. They had to figure it out little by little through patience and effort and diligence, and they pulled off that feat. And that should give you an idea of white excellence. The Wright brothers are obviously the correct way to do it. They didn't take all kinds of weird and wild risks. But I like that American cowboy. I really do. He's freaking awesome. And you Americans should never, ever, for one second, how dare you, believe that you are equal to the blacks. You people are nuts. You've been inundated with endless amounts of Jew crap and Jew propaganda. No bloody way in hell are you people equal to those non-whites and those useless bastards in your country. You people have been giving blacks far too much credit. And even the blacks that you have got, you really give them too much credit. Honest to God, you're not those people's equals. Not by 1,000 miles. So here's the Wright brothers and the Flying Cowboy. That man has got spirit. I like that man. That man is awesome. He'd be awesome in anything. He really has got a lot of spirit, but spirit with brains, and he can do the wild thing and he doesn't get himself hurt. And there's something important that I've forgotten to say in this video, is that all of these blacks in Africa have gone to school. Blacks have gone to school. They have learned math. They have learned all kinds of subjects that you learned. Those blacks would not be able to speak English if they hadn't gone to school to learn to read and write. It's not like those blacks have not had an education. And years ago on African Crisis, I published some details of what the blacks in South Africa were taught under apartheid. And I had a good Canadian supporter come to me and tell me that when he looked through all that stuff, he said that black South Africans got a better education under apartheid than Canadians. He said the South African education system was superior to that of Canada. And all these blacks have gone to school. They know stuff. So it's not like they never learned to read and write. They had to just figure everything out themselves. They all have been to schools. All these black nations have got government schools. They did get an education. So here are the Wright brothers, followed by my favorite man, the Flying Cowboy.
give up, my friend. If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you will win. Every fight you